You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to hour number two of our first broadcast of the new year. It's January 7th, 2023. James Edwards and Keith Alexander now in what will be our 19th year on the air. How do we keep making it?
I don't know, by the skin of our teeth.
As long as Jesus continues to tarry his second coming, we'll try to be here for you, ladies and gentlemen. But I think you are in for an enthralling hour of radio right now. I truly do. Christopher Cantwell is making his debut appearance on the show this hour. He is a comedian, a writer, a voice artist who acted as his own attorney in the infamous Charlottesville trial. Now, I had known the name Chris Cantwell for some years. I knew him through reputation, but we had never actually spoken until much more recently. But as you know, we covered that Charlottesville trial with about a month of programming here in November of year before last.
As well as the actual Charlottesville event.
And we've covered Charlottesville from before the event, the night of the event, all the way through. But we did a month of programming, and I was tuned in every minute of that trial. There was a phone line you could call into and listen. And I listened. And anytime Chris was up to speak, I was absolutely blown away. I mean, this is a man who's not a trained attorney. He represented himself in that much talked about, widely publicized civil trial. And I mean, not only would he have blown out any trained attorney, he did it with such a flair and panache. I thought I was listening to something that was scripted like a movie. I mean, I had never heard anything like that in my life. Chris, I'm not trying to put the shine on you or to blow smoke at you, but having the opportunity to talk to you tonight is very interesting for me. How are you doing, and welcome to the show?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be on the show. It's a pleasure to be on AM radio, which I don't think gets nearly enough attention in the world. I know you guys are online, and obviously, too, but in prison, AM radio is the coolest thing in the world. And so it's a pleasure to be on with you guys.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for that. Yeah, not a lot of people pay attention to that aspect anymore in the day of live streaming and whatnot. But in any event, this is your debut appearance. So tell us who you are. Tell us who you are. What you want the audience to know about you, leading up to and including your involvement at the event that took place in 2017 in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Who am I? I keep on asking myself that, and I keep on getting different answers. But fundamentally, what I am is I'm the host of a podcast called The Radical Agenda, which you can find at ChristopherCantwell.net or RadicalAgenda.com. You have a hard time finding me on social media because, I'm not fit for broadcast airwaves most of the days, let's say. And I kind of got my start in politics in 2009. I ran for Congress as a libertarian and stuff. And then as time went forward, let's say my political views started shifting rightward in large part due to immigration. And that just put me on the wrong side of a whole lot of people, which ended me up in prison and ended me up in that courtroom in Virginia and all of this stuff. And that's the short version.
Let me ask you this, if I could. You've been in the big house, the real big house. It's not like some Jimmy Cagney movie from the 40s or 50s or something. Tell us what your experience was.
Well, I was housed in a communications management unit at the United States Penitentiary in Marin, Illinois. And a communications management unit kind of has its ups and downs because you're separated from the rest of the prison population. And so you don't have a cellmate. You don't have to deal with your average gangbanger most days. But the communications management unit is sort of like a prison within a prison. Some people call it little Guantanamo or Gitmo North. They got a habit of putting people there. A lot of my neighbors were named Muhammad. But in addition to that, if you've got any kind of like, what's that?
A lot of political prisoners?
Yeah, so I was in there with like Victor Boot, Monzer Alcazar, Matt Hale, Bill White. You know, how many? I know everybody knows Victor Boot because he's been on the news. Matt Hale is a founder, one of the founders of the World Church, and a creator. Bill White was sort of involved with him. And a lot of interesting people in that place.
Well, it's like a dictator. I imagine this like the way a cast of the Dick Tracy villains would be presented. I mean, you're naming some names there that have gotten international attention very recently. I don't want to go to that yet, though. I want to save that for the latter half of this hour. I want to get back to Charlottesville for, again, folks, utterly fascinating. We will highlight that in just a moment. But I noticed that there was a very much a discrepancy between the punishment that some people who were in Charlottesville that day received versus some of the others. So, for instance, I know that you were absolutely attacked and accosted, and I don't know if any of those people heard the first knock at the door, but you actually did have to, well, as you just mentioned, you went to prison. What was that about?
Well, I didn't go to prison over the Charlottesville thing. I spent 107 days in the Albemarle Charlottesville Regional Jail when that thing happened in pretrial detention. But I ended up, the case against me fell apart. They charged me with three Class 3 felonies in Virginia. I was facing 5 to 20 on each of those counts. They said that I had pepper sprayed a Jewish man and a transgender woman of color. And they are very special people, as you may have gathered, especially if you're a Democrat. The Democrats, that's what they're all about. And so these people saw a picture of me pepper spraying somebody in self-defense. And then they took that picture to a magistrate, and they say, hey, this guy's a Nazi, and he maced me too. And so they arrested me for assaulting these people. And they charged me with malicious injury by caustic agent and malicious release of gases. And so when I, at the preliminary hearing, they dropped two of the charges. They said there's no evidence that he did anything to either one of these people, and they kept the malicious release of gases charge, saying, you know, I released pepper spray in a crowded area, and if it was self-defense, and you know, that's then that's up to the trier of fact at the preliminary hearing. But they ended up letting me plead guilty to a couple of misdemeanors, and I walked away from that thing with my carry permit intact back in 2018.
Chris, I got to interject here. How white knuckling is that experience? I can't even imagine. You know, the suspense of waiting to hear what they're going to rule because, I mean, of course, our courts are criminally corrupt.
Well, and they're all the more so in Charlottesville, Virginia, you got to understand, right? I mean, you know, that city.
I'm surprised you skated. I mean, innocent or not, I'm surprised that you skated.
Yeah. Charlottesville, Virginia is a little ivy-colored North Korea.
Well, there you go, right? And so, you know, the Republican Party doesn't even run candidates for city council anymore. It's the Democrats versus the DSA, and the DSA is winning. And so, like, that place is really scary to be facing a criminal justice system because they're basically, like, they take one look at your skin and they've already know what the outcome of the trial is going to be. And so that was pretty nerve-wracking, which is why I ultimately ended up pleading guilty to the misdemeanors. I mean, their case fell completely apart. And they were like, well, do you want to face 40 years in prison or do you want to plead guilty to two misdemeanors and go home with your carry permit? And I was like, I'll take two misdemeanors and I'll go home with my carry permit. You know,
I couldn't even imagine the stress that one would be under in that situation, knowing how this system operates. Boy, we've got one of the men on the line right now, though, Chris Cantwell. We're going to give you all of his contact information. An hour is not going to be enough with this guy. We'll be right back. First break of the hour.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Unlike so many other media outlets, I actually care to know the other side of the story. I care to know Jason Kessler's side of the story. I care to know Chris Cantwell's side of the story, and I'm so glad that you've joined us for this journey. Tonight and for all these many years now, almost two decades on the air, thank you, and welcome back. So Chris Cantwell, utterly fascinating. Chris, I'm looking at everything I want to talk to you about this hour, and I'm looking at the clock, and I'm starting to get a little nervous here, so I want to speed it up just a little bit. Your thoughts on, I mean, obviously, we talked about the Charlottesville civil trial. We've talked about that a lot, but the various criminal trials that have been held for the different participants at that event. I agree with what Donald Trump said. There were good people on both sides. There were good, well, I take that. Wait a
minute. Maybe not on the other side.
I know that there were good people on our side, but there were probably some bad actors as well. But the punishment for the Unite the Right participants versus the domestic terrorists on the other side, I mean, what would you say about that?
What I say about that is the only way that you can explain what happened in Charlottesville in August of 2017, or for that matter in D.C. in January of 2021, is that the intelligence agencies are behind it. If these people were not aided by spies, they wouldn't be immune from prosecution. And so we've got a situation where you have state-sponsored criminals, state-sponsored terrorism domestically in the United States, and I don't think that there's any other way to interpret it.
We just had Jason Kessler on during the first hour. A nice 1-2 punch here. Obviously, a little bit more than tangentially related. But we were talking with him about some other things as well. But your thoughts on the latest news with regards to how the judgment had been reduced, and your whole thoughts on the so-called justice system at large?
Well, you know, you're very right that we're not going to have enough hour left for me to talk about my opinions on the justice system generally. But I'll say, you know, the damages being reduced is, you know, a welcome development. The fact that they were not reduced to zero sort of troubles me, because, you know, I don't have any money to pay these people anything. And frankly, I get the same problem at $5 or $5 million, that like these people are dangerous criminals and I don't want them taking my money and financing their terrorism. So, you know, my thing with the verdict was, you know, they had six counts on that thing. The first two counts alleged a violent conspiracy. The second two counts, you could have found us liable for any number of things, including harassment. Okay. And I argued that, well, we weren't sued for harassment. If you don't have a verdict on counts one and two, which they didn't, the jury deadlocked on the federal violent conspiracy counts. And then they come after us on these like state charges that say it could be harassment or intimidation or any number of things. And so I'm like, well, that's not what we were sued for. These state counts simply followed from the federal counts. And you can't hold me liable for something I wasn't sued over. And the judge disagreed with that assessment, but I'm going to take it to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, because, you know, when you look at it, I don't think that there's any refuting what I'm saying.
Christopher, this is Keith. You know, your cap on the punitive damages, an unlikely hero for you. That's because of the lobbying interests of the efforts of the insurance industry. That's why you have caps on punitive damages, and you were probably the unintended beneficiary of that, at least in Virginia.
Well, I was talking with Keith during the break before you came on, Chris, about that, because he is an attorney by trade. He's been attorney. How long have you been an attorney, Keith?
Over 46 years.
And it varies state to state.
I'm not going to hold that against you.
Well, for every 10,000 corrupt attorneys, you've got one Keith Alexander or one Sam Dixon. But anyway, Keith was explaining to me before you came on how this varies from state to state and how Virginia is actually a good state to have it in, even better than Tennessee or Mississippi.
Well, Tennessee is better than Virginia, but then Mississippi, it's wide open, and you would think that it would be better for someone like you in Mississippi. But as far as punitive damages, you know, they have no cap on it in Mississippi. And when it comes to Tennessee, it can only be as much as the actual compensatory damages, like doubling it.
All right, we don't want to get mired down in esoteric stuff, but it was an interesting little talk before you came on this hour, Chris. But anyway, let's go back to your performance there. Now, if people didn't hear it for themselves, there's no way that I could possibly verbally paint that picture for them. I had the privilege of having listened to the entire Charlottesville trial. I mean, it was gut-wrenching. It was horrific in some ways. But then there was Cantwell and what I heard. I mean, you
shone
were,
out. Even, you were the bright spot in the
Well, it was just the standout. It was the breakaway star. I mean, a lot of people did well. This was something that, again, Hollywood couldn't have scripted. And you did this while being deprived because you were – let's just say a ward of the state at the time, you were deprived of the normal resources anybody would have had representing themselves or acting as their own attorney. You were deprived of all of a lot of that. You can tell us what you were deprived of, and you still managed to really show up.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, when I went to prison over this thing that was unrelated to the Charlottesville matter. Like I said, it put me in this communications management unit, which they limit your communications. They wouldn't even let me have the complaint for trial prep, okay? And so I was really hindered in my trial preparations. And then every time they moved me, they stripped me of all my papers, right? And so I was arrested in New Hampshire. They shipped me to Illinois. Then they shipped me to Oklahoma. And then they put me in the Central Virginia Regional Jail during the trial. And so every time they did this, they took all my papers away from me, and I didn't have any computer resources at the jail. And as I walk into the courtroom, they dump this box of papers and this encrypted hard drive on me, and they're like, yeah, here's all the evidence, have at it. And I'm like, well, how am I supposed to do this, you know? But I was fortunate in that since I had that criminal matter down there in 2017, I knew a lot about what happened already. And so, you know, and I am a broadcast professional myself, and I got away with words, you might say. And so I managed to run circles around these people, and it was a lot of fun.
No, you did. I mean, as I said before, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't hear it, what we can tell you about it tonight won't come near to doing it justice. But I listened, and there were trained attorneys who were presenting during that case throughout the trial. And you know, what Chris did was Hollywood-esque. It was, how did you do? I mean, tell us the truth. You got to have.
Here's the thing.
What's your IQ? It's got to be two or three.
Did you have some jailhouse lawyers helping you or what?
No. He's got 300 IQ. It's got to be off the charts.
You know, I'm not quite 300, but you know, I break them triple digits there. The defense attorneys who were there, I mean, they meant well enough. I mean, their whole thing was just to call attention to a lack of evidence, right? I went in there with higher ambitions. I am still determined right now, and I will be until it happens or I die, to tell people the truth about what happened down there, right? The whole, you know, that whole January 6th fiasco never would have happened if people understood what happened to us in Virginia, okay? And so I want everybody to understand that we were set up down there, and I was determined to prove that. And I knew a lot of people were going to be paying attention to this trial. And I think I succeeded. I mean, you know, this headline is that there was a $25 million verdict was reduced down to $2 million or whatever. But the headline should be that we beat them on the violent conspiracy counts, that there was no violent conspiracy down there. And I did that. I beat those people. I won, okay? And so I was determined to do that. And fortunately, like I said, you know, when I had this my own criminal matter down there, I had gone over every frame of video. I knew who the players were. I knew who started the fight. I had like played these videos back in slow motion 1,000 times. So I knew what was going on, and I knew that these people were lying, and I'm good at making fun of people and making idiots out of liars, right? And so, like, when I'm up there questioning these people and they're lying, I'm illustrating the ridiculousness of what they do by asking them questions. You know, and as Keith is surely aware, you know, when you're questioning a witness, you don't get to make statements, right? But you can speak through your questions, you know? And I had read, right before I went down there, I read an interesting book by Trey Gowdy titled Doesn't Hurt to Ask. And he's a former federal prosecutor who was in Congress for a while. And he talked about, like, questioning technique. And I've also done some, like, reading about, like, influence, like Robert Cialdini and Scott Adams and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, I know how to get a message across, let's say. And I was managing to do it through the questions. And these people knew that they were getting caught in their lies, and it made them really uncomfortable, which boosted my ego, which, you know, is basically what I live for. And so I ran circles around them. We had a lot of fun.
Well, you know, we had people that tried to talk me to going to Charlottesville and to D.C. on the January the 6th, and I turned them all down because I'm old enough to have remembered the Civil Rights Movement, and I knew the whole thing was a setup. You know,
yeah.
The whole thing in the Civil Rights Movement, it was a theatrical production. They sent them to the Highlander Folk School. They got them all on all of that type of stuff, and they, you know, it was, and they had battalions
right.
of lawyers with money.
Got
to
be right back. We got to take a hard break. Hang on. We'll be
we
back.
Didn't have.
Chris Cantwell's right back with us. Stay tuned, everybody.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. Finally, the country has a Speaker of the House.
After 4 days and 15 attempts, the clerk announced the results of the wee hours of Saturday morning.
The Honorable Kevin McCarthy of the state of California has received 216.
Republican leader Kevin McCarthy then took the oath.
So help you God. Yes, I do.
And now, the hard work begins.
Meanwhile, Congressman Hakeem Jeffries of New York made history as the first black lawmaker to lead their party in Congress.
That's Jeremy Scott. A 6-year-old student at an elementary school in Newport News pulled out a gun and shot his teacher.
The teacher who sustained life-threatening injuries is now listed in stable condition, according to a spokesperson at Riverside Medical Center. James Madison University confirmed that the teacher who was shot is alumna Abby Zwerner. A 6-year-old boy is in custody. Police say the shooting was not accidental, and they are looking into how the student obtained a handgun. The elementary school where the shooting took place will be closed Monday and Tuesday. I'm Kenneth Burns.
President Biden will visit the southern border tomorrow. White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby said Biden is eager to talk to local officials and Border Patrol agents in El Paso. Buffalo Bills safety DeMar Hamlin is posting on social media for the first time since he suffered cardiac arrest during the first quarter of this past week's Monday Night Football game. Hamlin said on Instagram that the love he has received has been overwhelming and that he is thankful for everyone who prayed and reached out. Hamlin added that the incident will only make him stronger and that he is on a long road, but to keep praying for him. The Mega Millions jackpot is now past the $1 billion mark. Lottery officials say no one picked all 6 numbers in last night's drawing. That means Tuesday's jackpot in the multi-state lottery game will be worth $1.1 billion. This marks the 5th largest lottery jackpot in U.S. history. This is USA News.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for healthcare, and here's why. Not only is it open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also a time you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. And it's true, the typical family switching to MediShare saves $500 or more a month, which is obviously huge for a lot of people, but what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to health insurance. Double. There are 400,000 members, they've shared over $4 billion in medical bills, and it really is a great community too. People encourage and pray for each other. And here's the thing, if you join MediShare Complete right now, they'll waive your new member fees and you'll save an additional 10% off all of 2023. That's right, no fee to join, 10% off every month of next year, but it's a very limited time offer. You have to sign up before January 15th. Great savings, great health care. Find out more. Call now. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Brand new year, opening night of the 2023 broadcasting year. We've given you one haymaker after another. James Edwards and Keith Alexander. Chris Cantwell. Chris, we've been talking with you about, well, a lot, but especially the Charlottesville civil trial. And I do want to move on to some other things that I think will be just riveting for the listeners. But I got to ask you this, because of all that I listened to, and I made mention of the fact that I did listen to it. I said the entire trial. I mean, literally, without exaggeration, probably 90% of every minute I listened to on the phone. And there was one exchange that stood out of all of your pageantry more than the rest. And correct me if I'm wrong about this, but the name of the trial was Sines versus Kessler, and Elizabeth Sines was the Sines in Sines versus Kessler. And there was
you
one
are correct,
video.
Sir.
Thank you. There is one video that Elizabeth Sines entered into evidence. And in it, I believe it was her. I believe it was she who asked, Josh, if you're listening. And you asked, who's Josh? And the judge shot you down. What was going on there?
So I genuinely, you know, an important fact to note here is that, as Keith knows, lawyers don't usually ask questions that they don't know the answer to. But I'm not a lawyer. I didn't know who Josh was. I was like, oh, I must
See,
have hit a nerve.
That's down, crazy right? to me. Pardon the interruption, my friend, but that's crazy to me because I did know. Because I had to, and it just shows your instincts because you had no foreknowledge. And pardon the interruption, but I just wanted to accentuate that point. It shows your instincts that were on display during that trial as you represented yourself with huge stakes on the line. Go ahead.
Right. And so what I found out afterwards, I had seen this motion come across that apparently a couple of Judge Moon's clerks, Judge Moon is the district court judge who is presiding over the case. Apparently a couple of his clerks were friends with the plaintiffs. And this guy, Josh. Yeah, a guy named Josh who's mentioned in the video, who they were talking about coming to his house, works for the judge who was presiding over the case. And so
go ahead and finish. I'm sorry.
Violation of the code of judicial conduct.
Hold on. I'll ask you that. I pardon the interruption, Chris. I'm animated here. I'm going to let you finish. When you're finished, I'll ask Keith the question. Go ahead.
Well, I've been on radio. You guys, this is your show, you know, but the judge, these people worked for the judge, and my co-defendants had moved to have them recuse themselves or something. And the judge denied the motion as moot, saying, oh, well, we already talked about this. We knew about it, and they've already recused themselves from the case. And we're like, okay, well, that's a fine thing for us to find out on social media and then bring it to your attention, and then you tell us about it. Sounds to me like there's a conflict of interest there. And, you know, I would say that I think that's shown throughout the entire ordeal that, you know, these people who were, you know, obviously caught lying were really given the benefit of every doubt. And there were plenty of doubts for them to get the benefit of, you know. And
well, it sounds to me like a violation of the code of judicial conduct.
So you had a clerk of the judge who was presiding over this case who, I don't know if he was in league, but he was at least familiar with the main plaintiff in the case.
He was familiar enough with the plaintiff in the case that she was on a live stream video talking about, I'm going to bring this mob of armed criminals to your house and we're going to hang out and have fun, you know.
In your legal opinion, Keith, should the judge have passed on taking that case?
Yeah, the judge should never have been involved in this case if he had that type of connection with it.
The judge is calling Keith right now to tell him to shut up. But Keith never turns his phone off like he should when we're on the air. But anyway, what would you think of Judge Moon's performance? I listened to the whole thing. He was an elderly guy. He had this distinctively Virginian drawl. What did you think of the way he conducted his court?
You know, I think in the courtroom, it was shall we say, better than it was on paper. I mean, it almost seemed to me that he was trying to give one to each side, right? I mean, if there's a judgment call, it was like he wasn't tossing a coin. He's like, you get this one, you get this one. And that, you know, had its ups and downs in that we didn't get shut down at every turn. But like I said, I mean, he basically gave these people the benefit of every doubt. And when you know, those of you who listen to the trial, you know, but like they were not deserving of those benefits. These people were lying. It was obvious.
I thought that was the biggest one that raised my eyebrow, what we just mentioned. But he, you know, he did admonish the plaintiff's attorneys from time to time.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't totally in the tank.
When they went searching for the jurors, he got pretty upset about that.
Well, his jury instructions were awful, though. I mean, again, we're talking inside baseball here. If people didn't listen to the trial, they'll never know. So I want to move on from this. But I thought that his jury instructions were particularly bad.
I think they were, too, and they reflected in the verdict, right? I mean, you know, the idea that you can find us liable for – that they we could be found liable for something that we weren't sued for. It's going to be the subject of an appeal in the Fourth Circuit. I mean, we wouldn't be able to do it justice in the hour, but it's I think that the instructions were wrong. I think the instructions were confusing and vague. You know, at one point during deliberations, the jury came out and asked, are words a form of violence? And we're like, of course not, right? But that explains to you why we were found liable on counts 3 and 4, but not counts 1 and 2. Counts 1 and 2 allege violence.
Counts 1 and 2
allege a violent conspiracy. Counts 3 and 4 are like wide open, that you could find us liable for harassment and stuff like this. The jury found us liable for harassment because they felt the demonstration itself was harassment. But that's not how harassment works. You don't get to show up at a controversial demonstration and then sue for harassment because you're offended. That's not the way that works.
Yeah,
and so when they said our words a form of violence, they're trying to find a justification to find us liable on counts 1 and 2 for our words. And that's not how the law works.
Well, Chris, this is Keith again. Let me just say this. I saw things up close and personal in the original civil rights movement. And I knew that we had a lot of naive people going in there that had no idea of the prep work that had been done in the civil rights movement. You had busloads of, NAACP, Legal Defense Fund, and Lawyer Guild lawyers there with stacks of money to bail people out. Everything was, you know, and there was nothing like that for our people.
You bring up a very interesting point. Now, regular listeners of this program will know, Chris, you may not, but we have interviewed the actual police officer who booked Rosa Parks on the night of her arrest. He wrote a book called Another View of the Civil Rights Movement. He ended
His name is Drew Lackey. He was with the Montgomery, Alabama police force.
He became the chief of police in Montgomery. We've also interviewed George Wallace's son. So, you know, it's interesting, though, that you bring this up. Could you imagine the protesters in that era being treated the way the Charlottesville participants were treated?
The Southern judges back then treated these people, the protesters, back in the civil rights movement with kid gloves compared to the way you guys were treated.
Your thoughts on that, Chris? I think that's an interesting point.
Well, yeah. I mean, we go out there, we're attacked. There's a video, there's ample video, there's tons of video, hours and hours and hours of video of these people attacking us with weapons. And then we're like, hey, these people attacked us. And they're like, you're going to jail and we're bankrupting you. I mean, I did not get to witness the civil rights movement firsthand, but I've done some reading on the subject and I know that, you know, even the Rosa Parks thing was sort of like, this was a whole setup. I mean, it was planned, right? And
it's
so these people are masters of theater, and they basically.
And it was done by the masters of theater of all time, Hollywood, which we know who runs Hollywood.
Right. And so these people are putting on one heck of a show, let's say, and it's difficult. You know, the only person who stands a chance against them is a showman, frankly, right? You go in there, you're just like a guy who's trying to tell somebody what happened, and you don't stand a chance because they're telling stories, you know? And you've got to come up with, you know, you got to tell the truth, but you got to tell your own story, you know? And so that's the thing that we're up against, is that these people they're putting on a show fundamentally, and if your show is not more compelling than theirs, then you're going to lose.
Well, back in the civil rights movement, the people running the show were in cahoots with the protesters.
All right, let me ask
That's
you,
not what happened with you guys.
Let me ask you this, Chris, and we may not have time to get to the answer. We got one more segment with you, and there's some other things I want to talk about. But how have the last couple of years shaped your outlook on things, and what's the way forward?
Well, you know, going to jail a couple of times has made me want to be more cautious, let's say. You know, I didn't understand what I was getting into when I stumbled into this thing. You know, I mentioned, you know, I used to be involved with the libertarians. And the libertarians could do whatever they want because nobody in the government thinks they're going to take over the state, right? As soon as I got involved with the right, all these people came out of the woodwork trying to ruin my life and end it, frankly.
That's interesting.
And so I didn't understand what I was getting myself into, and I took some hard knocks, let's say. And so I'm certainly trying to be a little bit more cautious.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are with Christopher Cantwell. What radio tonight? We're going to give you all of his contact information, but we got one more segment. I don't want to say it will be the most interesting of all, but it might be. We'll be back with him right after this. Stay tuned.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
In message one, we said that Satan, the father of lies, John 8:44, gave the left evil, spiritual power the more they use the lies. The political left today is the beast. Now the Bible confirms that the dragon gave him, the beast, his power. Revelation 13:2. The extra evil spiritual power that comes from the beast by their lying is what accounts for the string of the leftist criminals in the government that have never yet been prosecuted. It also explains why American capitalists support communism in the 21st century. Note 1. That behavior of capitalists was predicted by Vladimir Lenin, a cell of the beast. Note 2. Henry Ford was a capitalist, and he would have never gone communist. The difference between Ford and the present-day end-time capitalists is that Ford was born and educated in the Kingdom of Christ, 19th century America, the New Jerusalem, Revelation 21.
One more fleeting segment with the very informative and entertaining Christopher Cantwell. Chris, if time runs out on this segment, I want to get to this first. How can people contact you? How can they support you? How can they find out more about you?
ChristopherCantwell.net or RadicalAgenda.com. Cantwell, C-A-N as in November, T as in Tango, W-E-L-L. You go over there, .net. You can find out more about me. Get on my email list. Find my social media. I'm not on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and all that, but you can find me on Truth Social, Telegram, that sort of thing.
And I think we have one of those websites at least linked on our promotional blog there at the top of thepoliticalcesspool.org tonight. So link over to that, follow, support, and learn more about Chris Cantwell. So I got to ask you this. I mean, you mentioned it earlier. When you were, let's just put it, a guest of the state, you were in with what the system would at least describe as a veritable rogues gallery, including Victor Boot. Now, everybody should remember that name. It's only been a couple of weeks, right? That was the Russian who was at the center of international attention last month, in the month of December, when he was traded in a prisoner exchange for Brittany Griner. Now, Chris, we're not going to ask you
swapping baseball cards.
Russia got the better end of the deal.
They did.
Hey, we're not going to ask you to betray personal confidence or details of privileged conversations, but what was that like? I mean, to be in the same unit, and you described a little bit earlier in the hour about what that unit was like and why you were in that particular unit. What was that like, being with a guy like that?
You know, Victor is not what he's made out to be in the news. Victor's a very nice guy. He got along with everybody. He got along with the cops. He got along with the blacks. He got along with me. You know, I don't think anybody on that unit had a bad word to say about him. And so he was a good guy to know. And at some point, they actually put him in the cell next to mine. And then around the same time was when this conflict in Ukraine broke out. And so, you know, when I got arrested in January of 2020, on my show, I was covering the first annual impeachment of Donald J. Trump. And I was like, what is going on in Ukraine? And I started to really, like, sour upon some of the dirty work that was going on in that country. And so I had already been sympathetic to Russia's position. And then this conflict breaks out. And, you know, me and him were glued to the news and talking about it and stuff. And so he was getting these Russian newspapers from the embassy sent to him. And so he would, like, translate from the Russian newspaper and tell me, you know, that side of the news, which was an interesting take because, you know, if you guys own a television set, you're probably aware that we're getting a lot of nonsense propaganda that, you know, empty out the U.S. Treasury. That is,
you can't
Zelensky
trust
guy.
Anything you're getting in the mainstream American media.
I just got to say, I'm listening to this. I mean, Keith, how interesting is this to you that, I mean, so here's Victor Boot, Brittany Griner, the black lesbian WNBA player, traded for him last month. It made international news headlines. And here's our guest right now, Chris Cantwell, who got the opportunity to know him for quite a while. I mean, I am, as a talk radio host,
I know the background. I knew the background before.
Yeah, but I mean, how interesting is it to talk to somebody who knew this guy that made so much news last month?
Well, I'm glad to find out that he is what I suspected, a regular person.
We actually retweeted on my Twitter an interview that he gave to Russia Today just a couple of days after his release, and you could tell he was a very he came across at least as a very stand-up guy, and I'm
and
sure
a gentleman,
absolutely. And Chris, I'm sure you can attest to that. What was it like? What was the reaction? Can you tell us anything about that when the word came down that, hey, Victor, you're out of here?
Well, I wasn't there when he got out. Like, I said to Victor, you know, we were there was talk of him getting traded out as soon as the girl got arrested, right? You know,
okay.
There was Russia had made the offer when they arrested Paul Whelan, the spy who's over there, who denies that he's a spy, but, you know, how many passports does a guy need? And so, you know, they had offered during the Trump administration to trade him then. And the Trump administration said no, the deal was still on the table when Biden came into office. And then they arrest the basketball girl. And so they were, like, talking about this prisoner exchange on the news, a potential swap for both of them, you know. And we were all like, hey, man, you know, that's your lesbian ticket home every time she was on the news, you know.
For lesbians.
And so I thought that he was going to get out before me. And I said to him, like, Victor, they got to let you out before me so I could tell all my friends that they're more scared of me than they are of the Merchant of Death. You know, and that was this, you know, running joke that we had. And I got out before him. And I was thinking that they weren't going to do it because we figured if they were going to do it, they were going to do it before the election. Right. He's got to pander it to the blacks. Right. And so when they didn't put him out before the election, I said, hey, man, maybe you get out in 2024 before the presidential election. And then, like, 2 weeks after I get out, I wake up in the morning, I'm listening to the news, and I'm hearing that my buddy got out. I'm like, yes! I was like, I was in a halfway house at the time, and I was like jumping up and down. I'm like, dude, it's my boy, you know? And it was,
well,
you know,
did you see, well, that's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. And I don't want to probe too much further into that because I know there's some sensitive, you know, well, not sensitive. It's just you had some private conversations, and we're not going to ask you to share that with us. But did you watch the Russia Today interview that he did, and what did you think about that?
I did. I thought it was an interesting listen for sure. You know, he's absolutely right that, you know, look, you couldn't, even if you hated Russia, you'd probably have to change your opinions about it when you're around Victor, right? He's such a good guy, you know? And so, you know, being sympathetic to that position already, you know, we got along. And so, I mean, it was, you know, seeing the interview was certainly an interesting thing. Hearing that he joined the Liberal Democratic Party gave me a good laugh. Because I was like, Liberal Democrat, that doesn't, what is this? And then I realized, oh, this is like an anti-communist thing, you know? And so, you know, it was good to see him home, you know?
That's right.
Let me say this, if I could, Chris. I, as a lawyer, have told my clients that I think that everybody ought to spend one night in jail just so they can find out how miserable it is and how much they don't want to do anything that would put them in there for a long time.
Of course, here in America, you don't have to do anything that'll put you in there.
Well, that's it. Basically, I told him, I said, if you want to go, there's a fail-safe way to do it. When you get stopped by the police, invoke your Fifth Amendment right not to speak, answer questions unless you have your attorney present. They will stuff you and cuff you every time. And this is...
You don't know anything about that, do you?
No, but I'm telling you. Well, I know because I had clients in there, and I can tell you this. My heart goes out to you because even if that was a better than normal prison, it's still a miserable place to be.
Well, and, I mean, who wouldn't rather be at home? That's for sure. But Chris, let's ask you this: we still got a couple of extra minutes than I thought. But let me ask you this: well, give us a 60-second breakdown. You wrote an excellent article very recently about the Russia-Ukraine situation. Now entering into yet another month here in this winter. What's your take? Yeah, almost a year.
So I think the piece that you're talking about was titled Not Exactly Kremlin Talking Points. And I think that my suspicion is that this whole, you know, Russia collusion nonsense that the Democrats were peddling was one more example of the Democrats accusing you of almost exactly what they're doing. I think the Democrat Party has been involved with international espionage, and it's running a lot of it through the Ukraine, is really what I think is happening. And for me to try to do it much more justice than that in 60 seconds would be difficult. But I mean, you know, there was a guy who called himself Weave, was like this Jewish dude who was pretending to be a Nazi who inserted himself at the central nervous system of the alt-right movement. And he was over in Ukraine, and, you know, this parade of Ukrainians is testifying against Donald Trump at his impeachment, and this Lieutenant Colonel Vindman guy was offered to be the Secretary of Defense in Ukraine. I mean, you've got a lot of dirty stuff going on through there, and they're interfering in American politics. And I think that Vladimir Putin saw that as a legitimate threat to his security, because you've got people trying to egg on a war with Russia and NATO. And so he's like, well, you know, here's the nest of spies. Let me go just snuff this thing out. And I think it's a reasonable thing for him to do.
Well, we were talking about this last week. I mentioned Sam Dixon earlier, talking about the color revolution of 2014. I mean, it's just we could do a whole hour just on geopolitics. And
the great comparison is the Cuban Missile Crisis. Basically, it was just the shoe was on the other foot this time. Who wants to have enemy nuclear missiles next door to their nation?
No, that's exactly right, Keith. And then this whole thing with Zelensky, I mean, what a sham, in my opinion. And then all of the money that's gone over there. I'd love to see, you know, that's what we need an audit of. We need an audit of how that money's been allocated.
What we actually know is that some of that money ended up with that Sam Bankman-Fried guy in this FTX crypto collapse.
See,
right?
Yeah, there you go. Well,
how crazy does something have to get before we say absolutely not another billion? You know,
well,
the truth is stranger than fiction.
Not another billion. Well, we'll see what happens. Chris, now that you've made your introduction to the audience, I'd love to have you back to talk politics, to talk issues, and to talk current events. But we'll see if any of the feedback gets cut off for the odious Zelensky now that the GOP has the House, and with a slim majority that favors people like Gates and Boebert. What is the political solution here in America? Is it local autonomy, secession? I mean, what's the answer? I mean, as we go into
obviously have a tyrannical government.
This new Congress.
I'd say the existence of a political solution is a debatable subject, but to the extent that we are going to pursue one, I think that you have to do it in Republican primaries, okay? Because we're certainly not going to start voting Democrat, all right? You know, we have a crazy, dangerous transgender left-wing party called the Democrats, and we have a wholly inadequate right-wing party called the Republicans, all right?
Feckless.
And so if you want to do something about a bad Republican, you get somebody to challenge him in a primary. And when the general election comes around, you hold your nose, you vote Republican, and you deal with it in the primary system. To the extent that there's a political solution, that's what it is.
Well, and that's what the game
is. Do we have elections that we can win now, or is the system rigged?
Well, we'll leave that to be a rhetorical question because the music has started. But I'll tell you this. Yes, I mean, that is where the game is played right now. It's not like in my ancestors' day when Robert E. Lee was calling up an army. So that's where the game is played right now. So we got to play that until the playing field is something else. But that's where the action is right now, and so we got to engage ourselves in that and don't do anything that would advocate or encourage violence. Chris, 10 seconds. Contact information one more time, please.
ChristopherCantwell.net. You'll find everything there.
All right, ChristopherCantwell.net. Find everything there, and we encourage you to do that. Chris, a fabulous debut appearance. We hope we'll talk to you again soon and about
Looking
other matters.
Looking forward to
Thank you
it,
for
Jim.
Coming on tonight. Hey,
thank
take
you
care.
Very
Roger
much.
Drive the big house.
Yeah, Godspeed. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back with a third and final hour next. Stay tuned, everybody.